listeners, my name is Arushavid, and you're listening to the Slice of Orange North Orange County podcast. Slice of Orange is a podcast that dissects politics in North Orange County. This election season, our team will interview candidates on NOC's ballot, explain propositions and ballot measures, and discuss general election trends. Our goal is to increase civic knowledge in the public and introduce you to ways of getting involved. My name is Arushavid, and I am your host for the day. Today, I'm interviewing James Cho, who is running for Fullerton School District Area 2. Cho is an Air Force Reserve Lieutenant Colonel who grew up in Fullerton. He has been deployed with combat, search, and rescue units to the Horn of Africa, Afghanistan, and Iraq. Cho graduated from Berkeley Law School and has worked on Capitol Hill. He currently serves on the Infrastructure and Natural Resources Advisory Committee, also known as INRAC. Voters will be choosing between Cho and longtime incumbent Hilda Sugarman for Area 2 of Fullerton School District. So James, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's first start by discussing your background and professional bio that has led you to run for this office.
So I think I can start by saying that I am a Fullerton School District kid and not just a Fullerton School District parent. And what I mean by that is I, like many Korean families in the 80s and 90s, a lot of Korean families moved into Fullerton specifically for the Fullerton School District. The reputation of the Fullerton schools was so strong that it reached the Korean diaspora, and a lot of Korean families moved in around that time. I started off at Sunset Lane, and that's where I really credit one teacher in particular. She was a daycare teacher, Miss Willoughby, who ended up getting married, and now she was called Mrs. Shadburn. But she really taught me how to speak English, because apparently English is the language everyone speaks here. In Koreatown, I think we were used to speaking Korean, but I found out firsthand that that's not the case everywhere else. So I learned how to speak English at Sunset Lane, transferred to Laguna Road at the time because of its GATE program, graduated from there, graduated from Parks Junior High, graduated from Sunny Hills. So I am a Fullerton School District product. After college, though, I went to the military. I joined the military as a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force. I'm now a lieutenant colonel. Time flies. But when I came home to raise a family, I talked to a lot of my friends who had slightly older kids. So I just want to speak for myself, wasn't as aware of school issues until my children got close to the age where I had to start thinking about how to start. Where to send my kids to school. And when I spoke with some of my friends that had older kids that were already going through the Fullerton school system, they had a bunch of questions and comments and a little bit of confusion as to what was happening at the district. And they started asking me, because they knew some of my background, I had worked on Capitol Hill. They started asking me, hey, like, should we go to city council to ask these questions? I'm like, oh, no. City council is very, very different. You should go to your representative on the school board. And when we looked it up together, I found out that it was the same person who represented my family when I was going through elementary school. So it was the same person since I was in elementary school, and started digging into a little bit further and realized that maybe the families that were raising kids now weren't being represented as well as they could be. And that got me down the path of looking at running to office. And that's what brings me to today.
Wow, what a great Fullerton history. You've lived here all your life. You've been to all these schools. And now you are running to be representing students who students and parents who are going
I could interrupt for a second, I haven't lived here all my life. I left after college, go into the military and work in DC for a bit. But I came home to my hometown. I think. I don't know if it was an age thing or deciding to raise a kid thing. At some point, I realized why my parents brought me here. And I was like, I want the same thing for my family.
Mm-hmm. My apologies. So this is your hometown and you've come back here to serve.
Yeah.
So if and when you win, what would be your three top priorities at the school board?
Yeah. So I think I want to introduce some abstract concepts like outreach, operating facilities, and helping working families, and just kind of get concrete. So for outreach, I think having your kids go to public school when you don't have a child already in the public school system can be a little scary. Like simple things like, how old does your child have to be before you can send them to public school? to more complicated questions. Like, I hear about this state testing and this test and that test. What does all this mean? So new parents can be intimidated by what will effectively dictate what their child does for 12, 13 years, right? K to 12. And so I think outreach needs to be improved. And that's why it's more helpful to have someone on the board who's actually having a kid go through the school now, because they understand what kind of questions the parents will have. And so, and a concrete example of that is, I think we could have something like a new parent boot camp. I'm gesticulating wildly with my hands. You can't see it right now, but the new parent boot camp could be prior to the start of a new academic year and can be advertised through various either social media or snail mail channels to let parents know, like, hey, if you have a young child, roughly 2 years old, 3 years old, and you're thinking about public schools, here are all the benefits of sending your kids to Fullerton schools. We'd love for you to attend a series of courses that work around a working parent schedule. And, you know, you can graduate with like the kitschy certificate that you're a new parent, you're new Fullerton School District parent, boot camp graduate, that would introduce you to some basic topics that a new parent should know about the Fullerton School District. So that's number one, is just to improve outreach in real tangible ways for working families. And then two, upgrade facilities. What does that mean? One of the schools in my district, in my trustee area, Fissler, recently celebrated putting up sunshades on the playground, but it was, I believe, all privately funded. And that to me just doesn't sit right. It doesn't sit right that we had to rely on the generosity of the family sending their kids to school to ensure that children could be protected from the sun as they play at a public school. So things like sunshades for schools, making sure that all children are learning in well-ventilated classrooms. This is a lesson that we learned from the pandemic. With air conditioning is another lesson that we're learning in certain heat waves. We know that children do not study as well during heat waves. So upgrading facilities in real ways, tangible ways, is a second priority of mine. The third thing is, I'd love to help working families. I think times have changed between now and 30 years ago. We have multiple families living in the same house, or multiple generations of a family living in the same house to help pay rent. We have both parents maybe working, whereas previously it might have just been one. And so I really want to help working families. And one of the ways we can do that is to bring county resources to the district. I work at the County Social Services Agency, where I help people sign up for free health insurance, get food assistance. I'd love to help bring those resources to the district. But another tangible way we can do this is to just make school buses free. I don't know if your listeners know, but we charge people $400 a year to ride school buses to school. And that is not great, especially because $400 can mean so much for one family. And compared to the $180-something million budget of the Fullerton School District, it's a drop in the bucket for the school district. So I ran the numbers based off of what was publicly available. It looks like the district is actually getting about $36,000 from charging the $400 or so for school bus rides. I think that's like 1/100th of the school district's budget. We can find that. We can find the funding there to pay for school buses, so working families don't have to pay to send their kids to school. So improving outreach, upgrading facilities, and helping working families are the three priorities of mine.
Understood. Thank you for sharing those. So my next question is more about your personal journey for running. And you already shared some of this in your first answer. But I also wanted to ask you, what specifically or who specifically is encouraging you to run for FSD?
Yeah, so I think you want specific names, and I would love to give it to you, but let me explain why it makes me a little hesitant. I think a lot of people have come up to me and asked me why I'm doing this. Like, don't you know how much money Mrs. Sugarman has raised for the district? And yes, I am well aware of the work that she's done with the Fullerton Education Foundation. I appreciate it. I love it for the children. I love it for the staff. I love it for the district. I think I want to separate those two out. So there is her role on the foundation, and there's her role on the board. And I'm deeply appreciative of her generosity and the time that she spends on the foundation on behalf of the district. When it comes to the policymaking side of the house on the board, however, I do think it's more important to have someone that understands parents, understands what teachers are going through these days. And I think by doing that, by creating a little bit of separation between the foundation and the board is healthy, because having someone control where money goes and then also being responsible with overseeing how that's executed, I believe is a bit of a conflict. And so I explain all this in context because there are people out there who would raise these concerns if they weren't, it's just sensitive, right? They want to raise some of these concerns, but they're worried about what might happen if they do it. So disappointed teachers who feel that the incumbent isn't pushing back on the administration on some certain priorities of the administration. Parents who feel like they're being squeezed by the foundation that asking them for donations. And so these are some of the people, the specific people that are encouraging me to run because they want some change. But I'm hesitant to name specific names. Now, publicly, there are people who've endorsed me and it's on my website, right? So I have people from city council members, Jung and Dr. Charles, to Assemblywoman Sharon Cork Silva. And those endorsements are publicly available on my website. But I think the number one thing that's encouraging me to run and encouraging me to keep doing this is my son, because my son's a Sunset Lane kid following in my footsteps. And thinking about that personal responsibility, it's not like an abstract notion, but making sure that our schools provide a quality public education is deeply important to me because of my son. So that's the person I think about the most as I'm trying to balance a full-time job and my marriage and fatherhood with a campaign.
Understood. Thank you for explaining. So for clarification, I did not actually need any names. It's just sometimes people have really cool stories.
I see.
You know, they had and that leading them to run, or, you know, as you said, your son. So now I want to move on now to actually the controversial questions that I think are nationwide education issues. This is not entirely specific to Fullerton, but nationwide in school boards, we have seen in the past 2 years, the school boards getting more politicized. And a couple of things that come up are regarding either charter schools or book bans. So I do want to ask you about both of these. You know, what is your opinion on charter schools? And then what is your stance on book bans?
Yes. Simple answer up front is I'm opposed to both. So I'm opposed to charter schools because I don't think we need to dismantle some of the protections, whether they're labor protections or some of the oversight protections that a regular public school would have in the name of innovation. We can have innovation via the public school system. And I think Fistler is a great example of that. Secondly, for book bans, I don't know. Like, so I hear what you're saying in terms of the politicization of school boards. I see it in the news. I see it happening in our very county. And I am worried about that too, because public education shouldn't be politicized. It's not like a left or right, Democrat or Republican issue. It's just the core of a good civic education and a good public education. It's a core of what we need to make our country stronger. And I'm opposed to extremists or partisans that are trying to influence that public education via banning certain books or trying to undermine public education generally by spreading misinformation about what our public school teachers and staff are doing. I'm concerned because a lot of these efforts, sometimes they end in the privatization of public resources. And let me explain what I mean by that is a lot of these groups are spreading disinformation or actively trying to undermine public education, which undermines already declining enrollment in our public schools. And so as we see in a couple other places in the county, then a private company comes in and goes, hey, couldn't help but notice that you weren't using that school over there or that classroom over there as much as you used to. Would you mind renting it to us for our private company needs, maybe a private school? And so the erosion of public education can go hand in hand with the privatization of our public resources. And that's why I'm very concerned and oppose things like the book bans.
Gotcha. Thank you. So, you know, while we're talking about books, we always ask our guests this question of giving our listeners a book recommendation. So what book recommendation would you like to give to our listeners?
I think just straight up front is any book that gets you to read, whether it's graphic, short, fiction, nonfiction, just read it. But I do have one nonfiction, maybe one fiction recommendation. So for nonfiction, I would highly recommend There's Power in a Union by Philip Dray, D-R-A-Y. We learn about the labor movement happening in the United States, I think very briefly in our American history courses. But you read this book, which focuses on the labor movement in the United States, and you see the origin stories behind some of the laws that we have. Horrific accidents because there wasn't workplace safety requirements in place. So people were burning in fires, right? Like there's blood that has written some of the strong labor protections that we have in this country. And it shows how much more work that needs to be done. So that's a nonfiction book shedding light on a really important issue, which is the labor movement in the United States. And so I'd recommend that. And the second one, a fiction book, is Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis, which I think a lot of people might read for like an English class, whether it's in high school or college. But it's a super old book, but it's about a suburban man living in suburbia, trying to, I guess, find its way. I don't know if Goodreads will like that summary of it, but those are my two recommendations.
Thank you. So the recommendations are There is Power in the Union, The Epic Story of Labor in America by Philip Dray, and Babbitt by Sinclair Lewis. So moving on to, kind of, I guess, moving back to some of our questions about students and schools is there is this concern of COVID, the quarantine, and just the shutdown of schools having affected our kids in a negative way, both in the sense of putting them behind in their educational progress, but also having some real social consequences. So I want to ask, you know, our kids are really facing these setbacks and struggles. What do you think the district needs to do to combat some of these issues?
Yeah, so it's more than just a feeling. The data is actually there, publicly available, showing that there is a learning loss. An example of that is in 2017, nearly 8 in 10 English learners in Fullerton School District were making progress based off of the testing. So English language learners take tests, they compare the test results and go, are you making progress in learning English or not? So in 2017, 8 in 10 English learners were making progress. In 2023, less than half were. That's a huge drop. So now a majority of English learners in the Fullerton School District are no longer making progress. That is a personal issue to me because I was not a native English speaker. I learned how to speak English in Fullerton schools. And but for the help of people that helped me learn English, I would not be where I am today. And so that's about like 1,500 children falling behind in English learning. And this likely contributes to chronic absenteeism. And using the same years as benchmarks, in 2017, only one in 20 of our students were, quote, chronically absent. That means miss about 10% of the year. By 2023, there was over 150% increase. So now about 1 in 7 students are chronically absent. That's about 1,500 children students being left behind. And if you, there is real socioeconomic impacts there that are not just, you know, a vibe, but actually backed up by the data. And I think one of the things a member of the board can do is to focus the administration's attention on that. So when everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. And there's no, I don't think there's an inherent ability of a board member to, you know, flip a switch and improve chronic absenteeism. I'm not suggesting that there's a magic wand solution here. What I am suggesting is that if a board member were to ask publicly again and again at board meetings for what the district is going to do, what is it doing to improve and tackle chronic absenteeism, to improve and tackle English language loss, you're going to force the administration to respond to that. It's public pressure. And I think that's lacking with the incumbent, is that there isn't enough moral and rhetorical leadership on learning loss. And the data shows it.
Right. So kind of staying with the topic of students who are struggling and our data kind of supporting that, we also have students who come from low-income households, students who have disabilities, who have different needs, different learning styles. So how do you think the district can support students with such diverse set of needs?
Yeah, so there are a couple ways. One of the ways, I'll just give you an example of what I did in partnership with the district, I think prior to me running for office, just as a regular civilian, is I work at the Orange County Social Services Agency. And we have been increasingly doing outreach with school districts because the school districts are trusted by so many parents. So they might not trust the government, but they trust teachers and staff at the school districts. Recognizing that and trying to mortgage or borrow some of that trust, we wanted to go into the district and meet families where they were. So we had an event with the Fullerton School District where in my official work capacity, social service agency, we brought a mobile response vehicle that was able to print out EBT cards or food stamps on site. We were able to enroll people on Medi-Cal, for your listeners, that's low to no cost health insurance, Medicaid for families, because we know that families that are not suffering from food insecurity or that are healthier because they actually finally have access to health insurance are not just healthier families, but healthier members of the community, and the children are not just healthier, but stronger students. So connecting the county resources to the district, I think, is one way we can improve that. That's one. But again, I think there are a lot of little things that we can do. And an example of that, again, is the school buses that I find absurd that we're asking families, working families, to pay $400 just to send their kids to school when the district can find the money elsewhere.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. So next I want to talk about community and connection with community. So school district races, they are, low information races. They're lower down on the ballot and voters either don't know that they exist or they don't know who's running for them. So there's generally a lot of lack of information there too. So how are you getting the word out that you're running? How are you connecting and meeting with your constituency?
Yeah. So I think, one of the strengths that I have as a current working parent is that I am just being introduced to other working parents through just the network, the mom and dad network. There are mom and dads that are introducing me to other mom and dads who never knew that there was even an election for a school board even happening. And I think that's because for the first time in nearly three decades, we actually have a choice. But so that's one, is that just word of mouth. I'm seeing a lot of enthusiasm from parents who are excited to get someone on the board that might be more responsive to what's happening on the ground today. Two, I'm actually knocking on a variety of doors, literally, no joke, thousands of doors, knocking on doors to introduce myself. We recently had a heat wave. I did not ask any volunteers to do this. I did it myself. I kept thinking about my Army and Marine friends giving me hell if they found out that I, as an Air Force guy, was complaining about the heat. So that's what was driving me last weekend to knock on the doors during the 100 and whatever degree heat wave, and just introducing myself to voters and residents directly. And finally, things like this, right? I'm willing to make myself available in any way, shape, or form to hold myself accountable, to ask and answer questions of what's important to you. Let me find out and let me see how I respond to that. So I'm taking advantage of a variety of channels and methods to get my name out there.
Right. And definitely using that in person, face-to-face interaction, which really is the most effective in political campaigning. So my other question is, and similarly, so many people have disconnected from our local communities because of the pandemic and various other reasons. So if you are elected, how do you plan to meet with your constituents and be available as a local, representative?
Yeah, so I think maybe this is just too cute of an answer, is just to meet people where they are. I find it difficult to go to PTA meetings. For example, Sunset Lane's PTA meeting is at 8:40, I think 8:45 in the morning. I got to be at work. A lot of meetings are in the middle of the day. Maybe it's a holdover from a different era, but I think one way we can improve involvement from working parents is to make ourselves available off hours. So you want to grab coffee on a weeknight to yell at me about something? Let's grab coffee. You want to meet me on the weekend? Let's meet on the weekend. You just want to slide into my DMs on Instagram, the message me on Instagram, email me. I think by electing someone who understands what parents are going through now, you're going to get someone who's more accessible, because I get it. I would love to talk to someone if I had concerns, not between banker's hours of 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Like, sometimes the weekends are the only chance you have to do something. And so I hope to do that when I'm in office.
Right. So if our listeners want to reach out to you, how would they be able to do that? Could you give us some of your contact information, please?
Yeah. So the easiest way is to reach out to me. Go to my website, jamesforfullerton.com. You know, that's jamesforfullerton.com. On it, you'll see an email address, hello@jamesforfullerton.com. If you email me there, feel free to do so, and I'll respond. And I'm happy to meet you anywhere, anytime, whether it's at night, on weekends, or weekdays, or just hop on the phone and talk some things through.
Thank you. So we'll be sure to include that email address in our show notes. So now I want to move on to a question that we're also asking all the candidates this year, which is about getting involved in local politics and doing community and organizing work. Because again, because of the pandemic and various other reasons, our younger population may not know what a good tangible first step is to get involved. So could you please give our listeners some advice, specifically for youngsters, for people who are completely new to politics? What is that first step you would recommend they take to get involved?
So, okay, here I've gotten this question before in a different avenue. When I used to work on Capitol Hill, I used to work on Capitol Hill, and I used to get a lot of emails, cold calls, just hustlers, right? People trying to get their foot in the door for a job on Capitol Hill. And the advice I gave to them is, okay, like, you want to learn how to get on Capitol Hill, I'm happy to talk to you about it, but let's talk about why you want to get on Capitol Hill. And I think a lot of the younger generations were just like, hey, that's the fastest way for me to build my resume, to learn how to organize, to learn how to get involved in government. And the advice I gave to them was, go home. Go home. I wish I could go home back to Fullerton, right? Go home and start there, because you can do a lot of goodness in your neighborhood that you might not necessarily associate with government or power or organizing. And I'll just, you know, give you a quick shout out here, an organization. I think there's a group of high school students, Troy High School students, I think, that formed an artist group. I think they're called the Open Lid Collective. Let me just see real quick. I'm looking up Open Lid. Yeah, Open Lid Collective on Instagram. And they describe themselves as Orange County's first youth artist collective. Now, on its face, that has nothing to do with politics. That has nothing to do with government, right? But what they were able to do is get a bunch of like-minded individuals that were very passionate about a topic, organize them at very particular times and places to meet other people like that. That is organizing. That is power. And it doesn't have to be electoral office or some county, federal, state seat. You can do things like that to meet like-minded individuals. And then together, you can really effectuate change in your community. So if the Open Lid Collective really cared about funding for the arts, right? Together, they would be a hell of a lot more powerful as they approach members of the school board or elected officials than individually. So I think the youth have a lot more power than they think they do. They get the credit that they get credit for. And the Open Lid Collective is an example of that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Just last year, I think one of our reporters, Eden, now the editor of Young Observer issue, actually reported on this. So I'm glad you bring this up. And I would like to also add this to the show notes so people can check this out. So thank you for that. This is kind of now rounding out the interview. We've had a really good discussion so far, but is there anything else that I haven't mentioned that you would want to talk about?
For a second, if I could ask you a question, I would love that. I would love to know what the vision, where do you see this podcast going over the next couple of years? I would love to know more about that.
Yeah, so this podcast, A Slice of Orange, is a podcast that relates, that basically explains politics and does all things politics in North Orange County. It was started by Professor Jody Balma. And last election cycle, she did a fantastic job of covering all sorts of measures and propositions. We made a bunch of YouTube videos for the propositions. And then also these kind of candidate interviews. And the goal really was to bring information to the voters, because obviously, as you know, and as our listeners know, the lack of local media has really made understanding local elections much more difficult, because all the focus now with traditional media is on the national or maybe sometimes on state level candidates. So this podcast really does fill that hole that we have. This year, this election cycle, I was brought on as a co-host from, I guess, just being an intern who was doing videos last time to now being a co-host to do some of the Fullerton ones too. And these are done in collaboration with the Fullerton Observer, again, to bring the voters information that they need for voting. We are also working on a website so we can aggregate all this information, have resources available. For example, many people don't know about places like Ballotpedia, and they don't know about websites like CalMatters. And these websites have so much fantastic information to connect people to their communities. So I think the questions that I asked you at the end, especially about connecting people to communities, our podcast and The Observer overall, The Slice of Orange, and these two kind of entities, that's what we're trying to do too. We're trying to connect communities to their representatives and, you know, their future representatives. There's people who are running and taking, you know, a stab at local politics. So that's kind of the vision, is kind of having this multimedia, you know, we have YouTube and then Spotify, Apple Podcasts, social media, website, which the website isn't up yet. But trying to reach voters in all possible ways and really engage our youth, because Professor Balma, she teaches political science at Fullerton College, and people who, there are interns from the college who end up working on this podcast too, to get more experience and for their first step of getting involved. So that's kind of the vision, is just to help voters out and provide more information. And, you know, we're hoping to grow it. And we also do kind of all of North Orange County. So those are, I think, kind of that's the vision that at least I have in my mind. I'm sure Professor Balma would have more ideas as well.
It's a noble goal, and I appreciate you explaining that. It's basically the same thing I tell the parents that are concerned about, you know, the representation on the board, is the only people that are going to save us are ourselves, right? So y'all saw a gap in coverage. And rather than just sitting on your hands and complaining about it and going, "Ah, someone should do something about this," y'all are doing something about it. So I appreciate the coverage that that you're doing of local races that are important and often overlooked. Please let me know how I can help, win or lose in this campaign. Let me know how I can help. I can try to get you people on, more people on. I want to help. So I appreciate your time today.
Well, yeah, thank you so much for being with us today. And I would love to share ways and ideas for you to help and for other listeners to help as well. We have actually released an episode about that, and hopefully we'll be releasing more stuff. So if people could stay tuned, that would actually be the greatest help to us. So thank you so much for being on the show with us today, James. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope you have a nice day.
You too. Thank you. So that was The Slice of Orange NOC, our interview with James Cho, who is running for Fullerton School District against Hilda Sugarman, the incumbent. For more episodes, please check out Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.